The door opened to an unfamiliar sapping sound, and Silgal's skin went dry. Silgal was not taking chances, not with creatures that spat flesh-eating acid and stunned their prey with sonic blasts. Creatures whose blood became a neurotoxin in most kinds of air, whose toe pads harbored 100 deadly retroviruses. She was too fatigued to analyze the situation, too prone to mistakes lately to gamble with the lives of everyone on Eclipse. Silgal backed quietly out the door, then slipped the comlink from her pocket and raised it to her lips. A plaintive Wookiee groan rolled out of the room, and she grew aware of a strange heaviness in the force. With a start, she realized the sound she had heard was crying. Human crying. Silgal peered through the door and saw a line of young Jedi standing on the other side of the room, looking through a transparasteel observation panel into the frozen tissue locker. At one end of the group stood Anakin, tall, lanky, and broad-shouldered in the way of human males as they crossed from adolescence into adulthood, recognizable even from behind by his sandy brown tousled mane. Beside him, as always, stood Tahiri, small and svelte, with short-cropped blonde hair, feet customarily bare, her EV footwear in one hand and Anakin's arm in the other. The Wookiee groan had come from the opposite end of the line, where russet-furred Lobaka stood with Jaina Solo's slender form wrapped into his hairy arm. Next to them stood Zek and Tenel Ka. Zek, a wiry young man with shaggy black hair hanging over his collar. Tenel Ka, a tall and willowy beauty with rust-colored hair and an arm amputated just above the elbow. And more or less in the center was the one Silgal had heard crying, blonde-haired Raynar Thull, standing alone with his fists pressed against the transparasteel, his shoulders rising and falling as he sobbed. Silgal started to back away, but her presence had not gone unnoticed. Tenel Ka turned and fixed a pair of red-rimmed eyes on her.
"Do not mind us," she said. "We are not here to disturb your work."
Feeling the companion's anguish through the force, but unsure of what to do about it, Silgal entered the room and went to the closet where she kept the cryosuit she would need to collect her samples.
"Someone else has died?" she asked, fearing the truth even as she surmised it.
"Lusa,"
Anakin said, voice cracking. Lusa was one of their close friends from the Academy on Yavin 4, a nature-loving female from the planet Chiron. Anakin gestured vaguely toward the frozen carcasses in the tissue locker. A pack of Voxen ran her down. Silgal felt a stab of guilt.
"I am sorry to be so slow. I have learned much about these creatures, but nothing of use."
"Don't these Voxen have a weakness?" Tahiri asked. "The Sand People say everyone has a weakness. Everyone except them."
"They have no weakness I have found," Silgal answered. "As we suspected, the Voxen are part of this galaxy and part of the Yuuzhan Vongs, but I have not gone far beyond that. There is so much that makes no sense."
"You are tired." Tenel Ka came over and held one of the suit's bulky arms.
"I will help you."
"Maybe she should rest." Anakin turned around, revealing eyes as red as Tenel Ka's. "It's hard to think straight when you can't even stand." Silgal smiled at his concern.
"You're right, of course, but I cannot bring myself to sleep while others are dying."
She pushed her arm through the second sleeve.
"I may as well work."
"Is there anything we can do?" Tenel Ka asked. "We have sentry duty in an hour, but..."
"You can watch," Silgal said. "You can tell me how I keep contaminating these samples."
"Contaminating them?" Tahiri asked. "What do you mean?"
"Their genetic codes always map the same," Silgal said. "It's not the equipment. I have checked, so I must be contaminating the samples when I collect them."
Tenel Ka exchanged glances with her friends, then laid a hand on Silgal's arm to stop her from closing the suit.
"How many times have you tried?"
4,
Silgal said.
"And they always map the same?" Jaina asked.
"Exactly the same?" Silgal nodded, struggling to see what the young Jedi were driving at.
"We are making a systematic error somewhere."
"And what if you are not?"
Tenel Ka asked. A wave of weariness came over Silgal, and she shook her head.
"We are. No two genetic sequences are identical. There are always differences."
"Not always," Jaina said.
Silgal frowned, then felt her skin brighten to a pale green.
Clones? She gasped. They're cloning the Voxen.
Why would they do that? Tenelka asked. Would it not make more sense to breed them?
Perhaps.
Silgal was suddenly wide awake, her thoughts flying at light speed.
Unless they have only one.
Anakin's eyes lit with excitement. Or perhaps it was determination. That would be a weakness, definitely.
With the milky splendor of the galactic core pouring down through its transparasteel ceiling, the crater room on Eclipse was one of the few that still had light. An attempt to feed more power to the central cooling system had blown a primary switching bank, shutting down all non-vital systems and compelling the Jedi to hold their assembly in one of the Eclipse program's labs. Han and Lando Calrissian stood a little off to the side with Leia's Nogri bodyguards. Leia was near the front with Mara, Silgal, and the older Jedi, while Jason and Jaina stood with Tenelka, Loey, Raynar, Zek, and the more thoughtful of the younger Jedi Knights. Anakin, with his friend Tahiri at his side, was surrounded by his growing gaggle of companions, now including three Barabel hatchmates, Ulaha Kore, a red-haired human woman named Errol Besa, and the Twi'lek, Alima Rar. Silgal was the first to break the silence.
I asked Master Skywalker to call this meeting because I wanted to give you some hopeful news. Instead, I must again apologize for my tardiness in solving the problem.
The Mon Calamari turned her bulbous eyes toward the floor.
Forgive me. Don't think like that.
Though Anakin's eyes were wet with barely restrained tears, his tone was warm.
No one could do better. Without you, we wouldn't even know these things were part Vornsker.
That's right, Ganna Risode agreed. The big man's scarred cheek lent a dangerous air to an otherwise rakishly handsome face. Everyone knows how hard you've been working, just by how hard we've been working. This drew a chorus of agreement, for Silgal was keeping many of the Jedi busy trying to identify the location of the original Voxen, the Queen, as they now called her. Meanwhile, Anakin and his group rushed from planet to planet, retrieving Voxen corpses for Silgal, who plotted dispersal patterns and correlated data. The result of all that effort had been to confirm that all Voxen were indeed clones of a single creature.
My friends, Silgal said, I discovered something very interesting in that last Voxen retrieved by Ulaha and Errol.
She tipped her head toward the pair, both standing with the flock of young females that always seemed to gather around Anakin these days.
In its stomach was a full-grown Isalamiri, and in the Isalamiri's stomach were several Olbio leaves.
So these things eat Isalamiri? Raynar asked. Is that what you're telling us?
No. Silgal is telling us where to find the Queen, Jason said. You ran a metals study on the leaves?
Silgal smiled.
A perfect match. The leaves came from Murker.
Lando let out a low whistle, and Han drew a disapproving glance from Leia by expressing his emotions in a less eloquent fashion. Murker was famous among smugglers for the high metal content of its trees, a trait that rendered orbital sensor readings unreliable and made the place perfect for secret bases. Under the best of conditions, it was hardly an ideal place to go Voxen hunting, and the task was bound to be complicated by the fact that it lay about 400 light-years behind Yuuzhan Vong lines. The room fell eerily silent. The question before the group was as obvious as it was pressing, and the Jedi were well enough attuned to each other to realize their next task was making a plan.
Let us dismiss any thought of a massive attack out of hand, Ulaha Kore said. Even if we could assemble a large enough fleet, and we cannot, our probability of success is below single digits.
And the mere attempt would telegraph our intentions, Luke said. We must think of a better way.
A commando force, Zek said. We sneak a small strike team in the back way.
Not unless you're better at it than Wraith Squadron, Han interrupted. They've been trying to penetrate the frontier between Corellia and Vortex for 6 months. The Yuuzhan Vong have Dovin basal interdictors everywhere. The Wraiths were pulled out of every hyperspace lane they tried.
Then we have to fool them,
Anakin said, speaking in his typical tone of teenage certainty. He turned to the younger Jedi gathered around him. The Yuuzhan Vong want us to surrender, right? So we do, and let them ferry us across the frontier.
Go on, Luke said, deftly drawing attention back to the assembly's more mature side. We're listening.
Anakin disengaged himself from Tahiri and stepped toward his uncle. It'll buy time for Talfaglio, too.
That would be a plus, Luke said.
How do we do this?
You don't, Anakin said. We do.
Han felt Lando's hand on his arm even before he realized he was starting forward, then stepped back and quietly thanked Lando for the reminder to hear his younger son out. Anakin looked back to his group.
We'll have a traitor turn us over to the Yuuzhan Vong on the pretext of buying time for the Talfaglian hostages. We'll set up a transfer for somewhere near Obroa Sky, let them cross the frontier, then take over the ship and fly to Merkur.
He turned to his older sister.
I know Wedge, General Antilles, has let you fly a couple of captured Yuuzhan Vong vessels. Can you teach Zek?
Jaina studied him suspiciously.
Why would I need to? You're not doing something that crazy without me.
A look of distress came to Anakin's face.
But you're only on temporary leave. The rogues could call you back any time.
Sure they could. Jaina rolled her eyes, then her face grew hard in the same way Leia's did when she would abide no argument.
If you go, I go.
Me too,
Tahiri said.
Anakin frowned.
You? You're too... If you say young, I'll kick you where you really don't want to be kicked,
Tahiri interrupted.
Nobody here knows the Yuuzhan Vong from the inside like I do. Can anyone else, except you maybe, be sure they'd know a Schaefer laboratory? Can anyone else understand the language?
Good point, Jaina said. We'll need her help to run the ship.
Anakin frowned at his sister.
Can you fly a Yuuzhan Vong ship or not?
If Wedge just had you put on the cognition hood or something.
I've flown...
And so has Tahiri, unless you've forgotten, Jaina said. She was referring to Anakin's narrow escape in the Yagdul system a few months before, when, along with Corran Horn and Tahiri, he escaped an almost certain death by capturing a Yuuzhan Vong scouting ship.
What are you waiting for, Luke?
Han shook off Lando's hand and stepped into the Jedi circle.
Tell him why this isn't going to work.
Anakin's blue eyes darkened to angry amethyst.
Why don't you tell me, Dad?
All right, I will.
He spun toward his son.
It won't work because...
Han was so angry he found it difficult to think of a reason.
Because you can't be certain you'll escape.
Actually, I think I can, at least reasonably certain.
Despite the indignation in his eyes, Anakin's voice remained calm.
I went behind Yuuzhan Vong lines to rescue Tahiri, and I have this...
He touched his lambent modulated lightsaber.
But most of all, I know how they think. We know how they think,
Tahiri corrected.
You know how they think, Han stormed. They aren't going to be thinking thudbugs at you.
Leia took his arm.
Han?
He shook her off.
And I'll give you another reason. You can't do it because it's crazy.
He shook a finger in his son's face and was vaguely surprised to realize he was shaking it at the height of his own nose.
Because you're not going, that's why.
Han!
Leia pulled him away.
This isn't your decision.
Han turned to scowl.
It sure isn't Anakin's.
When he turned back to Anakin, he was surprised to find his son glaring at him, more hurt than angry, yet unyielding and completely sure of himself.
Han, the decision is Luke's, Leia said. Not Anakin's, not yours.
Han turned to Luke.
This isn't a mission, it's a sacrifice. You can't send him in there. Not Anakin, not any of them.
Luke studied the floor for a moment, then turned to Anakin.
It feels right, Anakin, but I'll lead the strike team. You stay here.
After a tense moment of silence, Tenel Ka stepped forward. Her usual Dathomir warrior's dress now covered by the ubiquitous vacuum emergency suit still necessary everywhere on Eclipse.
Master Skywalker, forgive me for speaking so candidly, but have you lost your mind?
The young woman's customary bluntness filled the room with uneasy chuckles. Even Luke smiled.
I don't think so. Why?
Because you must know that Anakin's plan would never work for you, she said. It depends on the Yuuzhan Vong taking us for granted, and that would never happen with any Jedi Master. Even if they did not kill you on the spot, they would take every precaution to render you helpless.
She has a point, Ganner said. The leader has to be someone they won't be too worried about, and someone they'll believe could be duped by a traitor. He flashed a white smile beneath his mustache. Someone like me. Even Han could sense the reluctance of the other Jedi. When no one volunteered to join the handsome Jedi Knight, Jason said, Maybe none of us should be going. This drew a frown from both of his siblings, and Anakin said, Jason, this is no time to stand around debating good and evil. Either we kill those things, or those things kill the Jedi. And if we destroy the Queen, the Yuuzhan Vong will retaliate against New Republic citizens even more severely, Jason replied. Do we want that on our heads?
Jason, the blood is not on our hands, Alima said, Leku trembling angrily. It is on theirs. A convenient position, but will it save more lives than it costs? Ulaha asked. As Jedi, that must be our only concern.
And they were off, voices rising and gestures growing sharp as they argued the same point they had been contesting since the destruction of the Nebula Chaser. Luke glanced over the Jedi calmly, then spoke in barely a whisper. It comes down to a simple question. How do we fight a brutal, evil enemy without growing brutal and evil ourselves?
This is so, Tenel Ka confirmed.
Luke nodded. So do we destroy the Voxen and risk more retaliation? Or do we accept our losses, in the hope that doing so will save the New Republic many more lives than it costs us? What are you asking for? Ganner demanded. A vote?
Your opinion, Luke clarified.
Whatever I decide, I want to know that everyone has been heard. Ganner considered this for a moment, then nodded. All right, I say we go after the Queen.
Accept our losses,
the first Barabel, Tizar Sebatine, rasped. His female hatchmates echoed his sentiment, and Luke started around the circle. Though Han felt in his heart that they should go after the Queen, he could not help giving a silent cheer every time someone supported accepting their losses. Han? Caught by surprise, Han looked from Leia to her brother. Yeah? Your opinion?
Mine?
You're part of this, Luke said. You have a say. Han glanced back to Leia, and seeing the silent plea in her eyes, wondered how she could be so strong. Okay, give me a minute. He closed his eyes and tried to calm himself with a few deep breaths. It didn't help, not really. He knew why his son wanted to lead this mission, why Anakin had fought in every major Jedi battle since the invasion began, why he had charged off alone to rescue Tahiri. Chewbacca. No matter how much Anakin claimed otherwise, it all came down to Chewbacca.
Dad, Anakin said, just do what you think's right.
I didn't need to hear that. I really didn't. Han opened his eyes and found his son standing in front of him. He started to take the boy by his shoulders, but realized how ridiculous he would look spreading his arms so wide, and clasped a forearm instead. You don't have to do this, you know.
I know.
The hurt in Anakin's face was instantly replaced by an alarming brashness.
But I'm going to.
With the uneasy feeling that he had seen the same cocky look in the mirror 30 years before, Han turned and found Leia staring at him open-mouthed. He shrugged and gave her a lopsided grin. Kids, what can you do? With Han behind the mission, Luke decided to go after the Voxen Queen. Jason turned to his brother. Then let me be the first to volunteer.
You?
No one looked more surprised than Anakin.
But you're against it.
That doesn't matter, Jason said. Nobody is as good with animals as I am. If you have to track down the Queen or something, you're going to need me.
When he's right, little brother, Jaina said, stepping to her twin's side.
And I believe we've already agreed that I'm coming. Like I had a choice. Anakin smiled, then turned to the other young Jedi around him. Anyone who wants to volunteer, see me later, after we've put together some kind of plan. Han felt like his knees would buckle. All three of them were going, all of his children on the same crazy mission. And he wouldn't be there to protect them, couldn't even consider going along because he wasn't a Jedi. Leia looked no happier than he. Her face was pale, her lip trembling, and still she somehow found the strength to hold her head up and look proud. "There is one condition," she said, turning to Lando. "I want you to deliver them." For the first time in a very long while, Lando looked surprised. "Me?" "You're the only one who can make this work," Leia said. "I'll help any way I can," Lando said. There were 1,000 little details, but basically the scheme called for the Lady Luck's crew to surprise the Jedi when the Yuuzhan Vong boarded. As the invaders took their prisoners away, a pair of Lando's new YVH-1 war droids would slip out of the disposal lock with an equipment pod and attach to the bottom of the enemy boarding shuttle. When the shuttle returned to its mothership, the droids would ride along, concealed from view by the shuttle itself. Lando let his sweaty palm brush against his pant leg, then transferred the data pad to the somewhat drier hand and displayed the screen to the subaltern of the Yuuzhan Vong boarding party. The picture showed 17 young Jedi knights crowded around the Lady Luck's dining table. Though their bowls were filled with green sacatillo, Lando had ordered his chef to serve only the finest fare on this journey. None of the Jedi were eating. Most were not even holding their spoons.
"They seem agitated," the subaltern said.
A brutish warrior with a fringe of spindly black hair, he stared at the data pad from arm's length, as though keeping his distance would prevent the instrument from defiling him.
"You are sure they do not know we are here?"
"They're Jedi," Lando answered, feigning irritation at a foolish question. "They can certainly sense my crew's apprehension, but I won't claim to know what's in their minds. All I can say is the viewports have been closed the entire trip." After a moment, the subaltern nodded to himself and turned to an unarmed but heavily armored superior waiting outside the Lady Luck's airlock.
"Ayadag lightsabers, Dumanyagd. Yenag do Jedi."
The superior stepped out of the red-ribbed transfer tunnel. A little smaller than his subordinates, this one had sculpted his face into a gridwork of raised scars.
"This is Fitzgibbon Lane, holder of the Stardream," the subaltern said, supplying the false names Lando was traveling under. "He is the one who sent the message."
Lando stared at the subaltern and waited for him to introduce his leader. When the warrior grew uncomfortable and looked down, Lando shifted his gaze to the superior and continued to wait. After a moment, the superior said,
"I am Dumanyagd, commander of the Exquisite Death. You have some Jedi for me?"
"For your war master," Lando corrected. Taking the commander's presence as a sign of eagerness, he turned the data pad toward the Yuuzhan Vong and dangled the bait.
"I have 17, in fact."
The subaltern scowled and reached out to knock the profane instrument aside, but the commander raised a hand.
"No, this I must see for myself."
Dumanyagd peered into the vidscreen, where Anakin and a few others were half-heartedly spooning Thakatillo into their mouths. The strike team had not been warned about the boarding, in part because Lando wanted their reactions to appear genuine, in part because the Yuuzhan Vong had come so quickly.
"Satisfied?" Lando asked. "I'd ask them to levitate, but that might give us away."
"That won't be necessary. We have already confirmed their nature."
"Really?"
Lando did not like the sound of that, but knew better than to ask for details. "If you want them, let the Talfaglian hostages go."
"If I want them, I will take them," Dumanyagd said.
Lando raised his datapad and depressed a function key. "We both know what 17 Jedi can do with warning. Don't make me release this button." The commander stepped closer.
"You think that would matter to me?"
Of course not. Lando sneered with more confidence than he felt. Even a space boulder like the Exquisite Death would destroy this barge in about 3 seconds. And what a pity that would be. No sacrifices for Yun Yamka, and no more Jedi deliveries for your War Master.
More Jedi deliveries?
The blue beneath Duman Yacht's eyes grew brighter.
You can bring more?
Only if Talfaglio is spared. I'm not doing this because I like you, Lando said. If you knew to intercept me here, then you know who I am. You know I can deliver. Duman Yacht lowered his chin in a vague nod.
I heard your message, yes.
In the message, sent to what the Wraiths had identified as a Yuuzhan Vong listening post, Lando had claimed to be a Talfaglian native, active in the Jedi Rescue Organization. He had given just enough details of past operations to sound like a low-level pilot, then rambled on for a few minutes about how the Jedi were betraying him by allowing Talfaglio's destruction. He had finished by naming a time and place and promising that anyone meeting him would be well rewarded.
You may turn them over to me and know that they will reach the War Master, who may or may not be sufficiently impressed by your token of faith to spare Talfaglio's refugees. Or you may release that button and be assured that when we die, 1 million of your people will die with us.
Lando looked down and stroked his lip, not feigning his thoughtfulness at all. If you put it like that, Lando said. The Yuuzhan Vong waved his subaltern and the boarding party forward, but Lando quickly blocked their way. No, I've got this all planned out, he said. My ship, my way, or you might as well call the volcano cannons down. The subaltern glowered, but looked to his commander for orders.
As he wishes, Duman Yacht smirked. His ship, his way.
The galley door hissed open. Yarsroot, the ship's Hodin chef, stepped into the dining cabin with his human assistant, both holding blasters behind their backs. It was the signal to follow the primary plan. Lando's tall wife entered the dining room from the main cabin, a nasty G9 power blaster cradled in her arms. Zek and Jovan instantly pushed away from the table and reached for their lightsabers. Tendra loosed a flurry of blue stun bolts, blasting both Jedi and red-haired Errol into the wall. All as planned. Lobaka and Krazov tried to rise and were dropped by stun shots from Yarsroot and his assistant. Also as planned. Tendra flipped her power blaster to full automatic lethal. Anyone else moves, or even looks my way, you all die. She glanced at Ganner, supporting the role he was to play as the decoy leader. That clear? As transparasteel. Ganner kept his eyes fixed on the center of the table. Do as she says.
Good.
Tendra motioned two crew members behind her into the room. Now sit very still and no one gets hurt. The two crew members started around the table, unclipping the strike team's lightsabers and tossing them down the food disposal chute, along with Lobaka's protesting translation droid, MTD. Jason experienced a moment of panic from Anakin and realized they had just run into their first problem. The disposal chutes still led to the flush lock instead of their weapons pod. They had intended to make the changeover after the evening meal. He reached out to Jaina and moved some of her serenity toward Anakin. Jason was the only one with enough empathic power to bind all the Jedi together. Nothing to be done about it. Follow the Force.
Tendra, what's all this about?
Ganner asked. This wasn't in the script, but Ganner knew what was needed. Jason could feel it. Ganner always knew.
Haven't we been good guests?
The best, Tendra replied. Fitzgibbon just doesn't like cowards.
Cowards? Ganner asked. What are you...
Talfaglio, Tendra said simply. A native of nearby Sikoria, she did not need to work to make herself sound angry.
Now shut that fly hanger of yours and stand up. There's someone who wants to see you. All of you.
Back to the script. Jason felt himself stand and turned toward the door, Tenel Ka close behind. She would be his watcher, her one arm strong enough to carry them both. Tendra stepped aside and motioned the strike team through the door. Down the corridor,
past the guest cabins and up three stairs onto the transfer deck. Things would be crowded. Airlocked, escape pods, who knows how many Yuuzhan Vong. Would the Voxen be there? Probably not. Nobody could feel it yet. The door slid open behind Tenel Ka, and something blunt caught her between the shoulder blades. Jason dropped to his knees and started to black out, then realized it was Tenel Ka's body he was feeling and reached out to the others, calling upon their strength to keep them both conscious. When his vision cleared, Yuuzhan Vong filled the corridor. At the head of the line, Ganner lunged for Lando. You double-crossing... The blunt edge of an amphistaff caught the big Jedi across the back of the head, dropping him into a dark pit before Jason could call on the others to keep him conscious. Not in the script, but probably for the best. Tendra and Yarsroot retreated into the ship, leaving the strike team in the hands of the Yuuzhan Vong. There were only six guards on the transfer deck with Lando. The rest were down in the access corridor behind Anakin, flanking the long line of Jedi. Teezar Sebatine, who was second in line, hesitated at the transfer deck and stared down at Ganner's unconscious form. A Yuuzhan Vong warrior, a large one with a spindly fringe of black hair, grabbed the Barabel and shoved him into the boarding suite.
Forward, all of you!
Anakin suppressed a smirk and stepped over Ganner's unconscious form. Teezar had played his role perfectly, forcing the Yuuzhan Vong to order the strike team to do exactly what the strike team wanted to. Anakin followed the Barabel to the far end of the deck and took his place across from the weapons locker. Tahiri and the other Jedi crowded after him, packing themselves just tightly enough to make room for the whole team, and not much else. So far, events were proceeding more or less as planned. Anakin turned his palm toward the weapons locker and reached out with the Force, buckling the door panel inward. Lando and the Yuuzhan Vong spun toward the screel of crumpling durasteel. Ulaha closed the pressure hatch at her end of the transfer deck, sealing the rest of the enemy boarding party out in the access corridor. Anakin twisted the door free and slammed it into Duman Yak's head. One Yuuzhan Vong warrior stepped over to defend his stunned commander, and the others, finding the space too cramped for amphistaffs, reached for their kufis. The strike team counterattacked in a flurry of kicks and blows. With the Force, Anakin jerked the blaster pistols from their locker mounts and hurled them across the transfer deck into the grasps of 10 waiting Jedi. From the other side of the sealed hatch came muffled shouts and metallic thuds as the rest of the boarding party tried to break into the transfer deck. Then Teezar half-turned, whipping his thick reptilian tail into the ankles of Duman Yacht and his defender, and sweeping both Yuuzhan Vong off their feet. He leveled his blaster at the commander's head.
Call off your scarheads,
the Barabel rasped. Duman Yacht's eyes flared with anger, and his guard, now lying behind Teezar, reached for his kufi. The Barabel pivoted and brought his heel down, a long spike folding out to pin the warrior's hand to the durasteel floor. The tumult on the other side of the hatch suddenly fell silent, and Anakin guessed the situation on the transfer deck had been relayed to the officers of the Exquisite Death. He leveled his blaster pistol at Duman Yacht's wounded protector and began to count. The war droids would need at least a 30-second distraction to slip out of the Lady Luck's disposal lock with the equipment pod and attach to the enemy shuttle. Teezar took his time, pulling his heel spike out of the guard's hand, then pressed his blaster to Duman Yacht's face.
Tell your warriors to drop their weapons,
the Barabel rasped. Duman Yacht surprised Anakin and everyone else by responding with an admiring smirk.
Impressive. The reputation of the Jedi is well deserved.
Teezar snarled,
This one wants surrender, not compliments. Then you are to be disappointed,
Duman replied.
You must know that before allowing 17 Jedi to escape, I'll destroy this ship and everyone aboard it, myself included.
Wait a second, Lando objected. Nobody's going to slag my ship. He started across the transfer deck to the inner hatch. Not when there's no reason for it. Alima Rar blocked his way and pointed her blaster at his face, then pulled the trigger as he moved to step past. There was a loud pop of a tripping safety breaker. Then she cried out and dropped the smoking pistol. Lando kicked the weapon aside. You see, I've thought of everything. He snatched Raynar's blaster out of his hand, popped a retaining clip, reversed the power pack, adjusted the discharge setting, and dropped Tizar with a stun bolt. Reversed power packs. Standard safety precaution, at least when you're turning traitor on a company of Jedi. Anakin and several others popped their retaining clips, but even Jedi were not that quick. Duman Yak's protector caught Anakin in a leg scissors, whipped him to the floor, and Anakin found himself struggling to continue his count beneath a rain of blows. The commander turned to Lando, pointed to the inner hatch.
Open it!
Lando stepped forward, his hand reaching for the override. By Anakin's count, they were at 25 seconds. The two war droids would be searching the bottom of the shuttle for a place to anchor. Jason sensed Anakin's worry, and Ulaha stepped forward to block the path, the long-fingered Bith hand flicking forward as she opened herself to the Force. Jason screamed first. Anakin experienced an instant of hot pain and thought his brother had been wounded. But then he heard Ulaha's whistle and saw the Bith stumbling forward, the handle of a kufi protruding from her back. Shock shot through the strike team like a stun bolt. No one had seen the attack coming, and the sudden pain dazed them badly. Anakin took two hard blows and felt the others reeling too, and then bodies began to fall. Anakin reached out with the Force and hurled a discarded blaster pistol into his attacker's head, was rewarded with another blow. Then the tip of a kufi touched his throat.
Done, Jedi,
the warrior hissed. Anakin did not even dare to nod. Duman Yak barked an order. A pair of Yuuzhan Vong lifted Ulaha off the floor and passed her into the airlock. A familiar hollowness came to Anakin then, the same hollowness he had felt on Cernpadal when he had been forced to raise the Falcon's nose and leave Chewie behind. And a cold fear rose inside him. They had barely made contact, and he had already gotten someone injured. Maybe this mission was too much for them. Maybe everyone was going to get killed, just like Chewbacca. Loey, Tahiri, even Jason and Jaina. Maybe it would be his fault. A groggy Wookiee groan reverberated through the frigid hold of the exquisite death. Cautiously, Anakin craned his neck around. Bobaka and many others remained hidden behind a small grove of Isalamiri-laden trees the Yuuzhan Vong had marched into the hold. But he could see Jaina and Errol opposite him, and Jovan and the Barabels on the wall adjacent. Secured to the floor with their hands between their knees, they were all fidgeting, trying to relieve the strain on their backs and legs. The Barabels seemed especially uncomfortable, with their thick tails stretched straight behind them and secured at the tip with Blorash jelly. Anakin glanced over at Zek and his brother and raised his brow. Zek nodded eagerly, but Jason closed his eyes and looked away. Unable to imagine what was troubling his moody brother, and not sure he cared, Anakin lowered his chin toward his left armpit.
"Activate escape," he whispered.
There was a hot tingle as the subcutaneous implant relayed the message. Then a heavy foot scuffed the floor behind him. Anakin ducked and caught the expected strike on his shoulder.
"Quiet, Jedi," the guard said. "Another word and I fill your mouth with Blorash jelly."
Uncertain how long the war droids would need, or even whether they were still attached to the ship, Anakin fixed his gaze on the floor. The guard hovered another 30 seconds, then shuffled off. Many minutes later, a series of distant thuds sounded forward in the ship. From the next hold back came a much louder whomp, then the muffled roar of explosive decompression and the clatter and shriek of equipment and creatures tumbling into the void. In the back of the Jedi's hold, the door membranes bowed dangerously outward, but held long enough to turn opaque and stiffen into Durasteel-like panels. The subaltern pressed his face close to the door as though to breathe on it. But then a cannon bolt came blasting through the opaque membrane and sprayed black gore everywhere. Anakin's ears popped as the hold pressures equalized, and the subaltern's two escorts were reduced to so much smoking flesh by a series of strobe-like weapon flashes. Anakin's guard yelled something about Jedi and spun to attack Anakin, and was cut in half by a torrent of rapid-fire blaster bolts. The stream swept down the wall, chopping through an Asalamiri tree to dismember a Yuuzhan Vong whirling on Jason. As the war droid, 2-1S, did all this, he was advancing into the hold, taking thud bugs in the chest and scorching two warriors near Jaino with electro rays. It could not have escaped anyone's notice that the droid was protecting the three Solos, a programming adjustment Lando had neglected to mention, but the others had no cause to complain. Anakin looked across the hold to 2-1S. "Secure the doors," he ordered. Anakin assigned one group to retrieve weapons and equipment from the pod, another to dispose of the Asalamiri, and the rest of the Jedi to evaluate the group's medical condition and tend to Ulaha. Only then did he join 2-1S at the forward door, where the droid was peering through the translucent membrane down a long access corridor. "Report."
"Sir, we are 15 seconds ahead of schedule. 2-4S was able to penetrate the hull with 10 coma gas canisters. Effectiveness assessment currently unavailable. 3 Voxen were detected in the stern hold and attacked with Class C thermal detonators. Post-blast sensor sweep detected no sign of surviving life forms."
1-1A, fished these out of the flush lock,
Tizar said, passing Anakin's lightsaber to him. As Anakin took it, the lambent crystal inside opened him to the presence of the Yuuzhan Vong, an indistinct fury somewhere forward in the ship. Bella passed out jumpsuits, and within moments, everyone on the strike team was garbed in a simple brown uniform that made the Jedi Knights seem both efficient and intimidating. Anakin fitted a breath mask over his nose and mouth, then affixed the attachable hood to his jumpsuit to protect his head. When the others did the same, he was so awed by the effect that he instantly felt better.
"Astral," he exclaimed.
"Let's go do this." YVH-21S opened his elbow and fired a pair of flash grenades down the corridor, then stepped through the tattered door membrane. Thudbugs began to plink at his laminanium armor. He silenced the source with a flurry of blaster bolts. Anakin ignited his lightsaber and dived through the melt hole headfirst, then felt an attack coming and brought his blade around to block. The thudbug sizzled out of existence with a sharp hiss. Anakin spun in the direction of the assault, stepping forward to protect those who would be following him.
"Very impressive, Jedi."
Anakin looked toward the voice and found Duman Yacht wearing a nullith and standing behind an instrument console. Ganner Rysode's limp form held in front with a kufi to the throat.
"There you are." Anakin peered around the bridge. "All alone, it seems."
"Lay down your weapons," the commander said cautiously, "and your leader will live to meet our war master."
Anakin thumbed off his lightsaber, then, as Lobaka and Tizar stepped onto the bridge, drew his blaster pistol.
"You really don't know Ganner, do you?" Anakin asked. "What makes you think he's that important?"
"You came after him, did you not?"
Duman Yacht retreated a few steps, bringing Ganner around to shield him from all three Jedi.
"We have studied you, Jedi. When it comes to the death of your fellows, you are soft."
"Not that soft."
Anakin leveled his blaster pistol at the commander's head, and Tizar did the same with his power blaster. "But I'll offer you a deal. If you surrender, we'll put you off in the shuttle with the rest of your crew." Duman Yacht's eyes hardened.
"And dishonored domain, Yacht?"
He ran the kufi lightly along Ganner's throat, drawing a 2-centimeter-long trickle of blood.
"Yuuzhan Vong, do not surrender."
"Really?"
Anakin reached out with the force and used it to push the kufi away from Ganner's neck. Eyes growing wide, Duman Yacht struggled for a moment to bring the blade back to his captive's throat, then snarled something in his own language and let it fly from his grasp. When the other hand twitched and started to rise, his head vanished in a convergence of blaster fire.
"By this one's broken tail,
Thizar slung his power blaster over his shoulder and stepped forward to pluck Ganner out of the mess.
They don't surrender.
The exquisite death was more than a day overdue, but such delays were not unusual for picket ships, which operated just inside enemy territory and had to be very careful choosing their routes.
I suppose it would be wise to assume the worst.
Savang La turned to Nomanor.
You will take the Kastar and start for Banu Ras at once.
Nomanor nodded, needing no explanation. Currently orbiting the planet Merkur, Banu Ras was the largest of the world ships to enter the galaxy so far. With a dying brain that could no longer control its spin, the shapers there now used Dovan Basals to give it gravity, Banu Ras was also three-quarters abandoned, a perfect home for the Voxen cloning program that was proving so effective against the Jedi.
And the Jedi?
Do what is necessary, but the Solo twins have been promised to Lord Shimra. Those you must bring back alive.
In all of Yuuzhan Vong history, there had been only a few twin births, and these only when the gods wished it so. In each instance, one had murdered the other in childhood, then matured to lead the Empire through a time of grave crisis. Lord Shimra himself had murdered his twin brother before growing up to have the dream that foretold the finding of this new galaxy.
As you command, Nomanor replied.
The feeling that filled his heart was closer to triumph than joy.
War Master, I believe this to be a mistake.
Vergeer spoke quietly, so that Nomanor would be forced to admit that he was eavesdropping if he wished to challenge her words.
Given that your reputation with Lord Shimra is at stake, would it not be wiser to send someone with a more certain touch? Nomanor has faced Jedi many times, and done poorly.
The door valve opened behind Nomanor, but he remained where he was, not so certain of his position that he could bring himself to depart. Savang La turned to face him.
You understand what is at risk, Nomanor?
Vergeer's words are rooted in rivalry, but there is substance to what she says.
If you are not confident of success, say so now, and let us find a better solution together.
There is no cause for concern, War Master.
Nomanor understood perfectly well what was at risk, his prefecture, and perhaps his life. Savang La studied Nomanor for a long time, then said,
This assignment is more important than any other I have given you. I think it would be wise for you to take an advisor along.
If the War Master thinks it wise,
the War Master does.
Savang La turned to Vergeer, and in a voice as stern as he had been using with Nomanor, said,
You will accompany Nomanor.
Vergeer's feathers bristled.
As his advisor?
She gasped.
One does not advise Kalor slugs. This will never work.
It had better.
Savang La gave them both a hard smile.
I have had enough of this jealousy between you two. From this moment on, you succeed or fail together.